A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. Can't fight the moonlight. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of PQRST, Parody Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. Have some stories to tell. I have a bit of a rant, first time in a while. And I kicked off this episode with my best Leanne Rimes impersonation for reasons that will be apparent later. Sitting in my living room on the snowy morning of March 26th. If you can hear a rhythmic noise in the background, that's our swing with the 12-week-old baby Isaac in it. And he has promised that he will keep the noise down as long as I pay attention to him during the podcast recording, and we'll see how well this works. Kicking things off, a bit of a rant. No, we're going to stop for a second, because baby is fussy. Okay, we got his arm free from the blanket and he's sucking on his fingers, and so maybe we can continue. A bit of a rant to start things off. This weekend, Batman v. Superman, Batman 5 Superman, Dawn of Justice opened last night, and even if I had not been doing an open mic last night, I am the biggest Batman fan that I personally know. I could wear a Batman t-shirt every day of the week. I try not to because I'm married now, but I could. And I don't have to go into the collection of Batman things that I have. Suffice to say that while there are certainly many, many people out there that are far bigger fans than I, as far as the circle of people I interact with, I'm by far the biggest Batman fan I know. And I am struggling to justify spending the 15 or 20 or whatever it is bucks to see this movie. And that makes me sad. An opening of a Batman movie that Joel Schumacher has nothing to do with should be filling me with delight. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I don't know. I'm sure I will see it, but the idea of spending money to see it is kind of bugging me. Part of it, a lot of it, is Ben Affleck. I really love Daredevil, and he ruined that movie franchise, and I don't care to think what he might do to the Batman franchise. But it's like they're trying to do so much, and they're jamming so much down this movie's throat. And, yeah, Christopher Nolan left some really big shoes to fill, as did Christian Bale. But I don't know. I just cannot get behind this movie. And apparently Aquaman is in it. And any movie that has Aquaman in it has a big strike against it with me. So, yeah, it's I guess it's a rant, but mainly it's just I'm kind of sad that Batman movie opened this weekend, and I'm not sure that I care. Let's move on, because I have some fun things to talk about. Since we were last together, how are you doing, by the way? That's good. Since we were last together, I have had three comedy experiences. I got the privilege of being the MC at the Waterstone Community Church Talent Show for the second year in a row. MC'd with my good friend and big sister Elsa Wolf. And we had a great, great time, and I enjoy being an MC. It's a different experience than what I generally tend to have. Usually when I get on stage, whether it's an open mic or showcase or whatever, whether it's 3 minutes like I got to do at Comedy Works a couple days ago, or an hour like I got to do at the Lakewood Cultural Center last October, I know what I'm going to say for the most part. I try to be loose, but you know, I have a set prepared, and I try to hit my time and all that good stuff. When you're emceeing, I did do a set to kick off the talent show, but after that, you know, you get up in between each act and introduce the next act, and hey, let's hear it again for whoever's leaving the stage, and remember to thank the wait staff, if there is one. There wasn't in this case, but also, there's a lot of fluid aspects to it. You know, if somebody has been on stage and they've kind of struggled, can you encourage them? And this wasn't an issue with the talent show, but if, you know, somebody's gotten up and done a performance and kind of lost the audience, you know, people are bored, people are walking out, what can the MC do to bring the level of the show back up? In the same vein, if someone got on and really did a fantastic job so that, you know, if you were the person following the current act, you'd be like, oh, crap, they are totally killing it. As the MC, it's not unknown to riff for a couple minutes just to bring the audience level down a bit. so that the next person getting on stage, I saw this at the New Faces contest I was part of last year. A guy got on and totally killed it. I mean, the audience, and he was the one who went on to win the New Faces contest last year in the whole entire enchilada. And the MC got up and for a couple minutes just kind of riffed. And I was like, what is he doing? And I realized, this is my opinion, I didn't ask him, but I'm very sure that he was just giving the audience a chance to settle down, letting the tone of the place lower just a bit so that the next guy on didn't have to maintain that level of excitement. Anyway, that's one of the things about being an MC. The other thing is, at least with the talent show, you know, so the last person up was doing tricks with a yo-yo, and we had one of the kids doing that, and he was great. The next person up is playing a harp, and the harp has to be put into place, and the microphone, and all this stuff. So, as an MC for something like a talent show, there are times where you're just going to have to vamp for a couple minutes while the next act is prepared. And it was good experience for me. Like I say, I usually get on stage knowing exactly what I'm going to say and having my sets timed down to pretty much the second, and to have experiences where I have nothing prepared at this moment, but I need to talk for a minute, was really valuable. And hopefully I will be able to get some more of those experiences, because once a year is not as much experience as I would like. If you can hear the squeaking sound, that is my son sucking on two of his fingers, and he seems to be pretty content. So that was the talent show. Again, fantastic experience. We were raising money to send a family at our church to Ireland. There is a strong ministry opportunity there, and God grant that they be able to go. Then this past week, I had the wonderful honor, as I have had about a half dozen times before, of being on stage downtown at Comedy Works. This was the new talent night, which I've spoken of before. In fact, my very first podcast might have been about the last time I was up for new talent night, the night I shook Dave Chappelle's hand. Dave Chappelle was not in appearance this past Tuesday night, but Hippie Man was, and Stephen AJ was, and it was some guy who was the headliner who was okay. It's funny, I never know. He told a couple of jokes that I've heard told before by someone who wasn't him, and you gotta wonder, was it just low-hanging fruit that he figured out the joke too, or did somebody steal from somebody else? No idea. I don't care that much, but it's just curious. Anyway, I wanted to talk about my experience at Comedy Works. It is, as far as I have, I'm just saying experience a lot, and that's just the way it's going to be. As far as my experience, it's always a great crowd. The show promoters that I believe go out and give away passes, get people off 16th Street and into the show. I mean, the room was a little more than half full, and that's as empty as I've ever seen it. Usually it's even more full than that. It doesn't matter that it's a Tuesday night, and a snowstorm was imminent. The room was still great. The audience is great. It is hard to have a bad set at Comedy Works. I've seen it done, but you really have to work at it. And so really having a great set, which I feel like I did, I don't put that on the audience as much as they did seem to enjoy themselves. It's like I've said before, it's kind of like the ice skating competition. Comedy open mics are like that Russian judge that, forgive me if you're from Russia, who doesn't like anybody and gives a terrible score. And being on stage at Comedy Works, kind of like the American judge, forgive me if you're American, who maybe gives an especially high score. Basically, in ice skating competitions, if there's six scores, they tend to take the highest and the lowest, throw them out, and average the remaining four, if there's six. If there's 15 scores, they take the remaining 13. That's how math works. Anyway, I call the Comedy Works experience kind of the high score in ice skating. I don't put a lot of weight on it, just like I try not to put a lot of weight on open mics. If I go out and I tell a joke in an open mic and it doesn't get a laugh, doesn't necessarily mean the joke is bad. And conversely, if I go out at Comedy Works and I tell a joke and it gets a laugh, that's great, but doesn't necessarily prove the joke is funny. It's the ones in between. The things like the open mic last night at Solid Grounds, which is better than a comedy open mic. It's a music open mic. More on that later. And not quite as good as Comedy Works. Nobody's been drinking. The crowd isn't as pumped up, excited to see comedy. Having said that, the specific experience. I had a 3 minute set because I'm on the C list. I would love to get to the B list by the end of the year. Then you get 4 minutes, and you have to be invited onto the B list. So there's a specific sort of accomplishment to get there. Anybody who has signed up over and over and over again until they actually get stage time and then does so again a second time is on the C list. So it doesn't prove anything that I'm there, but there is every hope. Anyway, I want to get to the B list. And my son is now asleep in his swing. So I don't think he'll be making a lot more noise for this podcast. I have learned a couple of things. And it's my desire to be professional, to look like I care about what I'm doing, to be someone taken seriously, if nothing else. And so one of the things I've learned, don't wear a t-shirt and shorts on stage at a showcase. And it's embarrassing to remember that that's exactly what I did for the New Faces contest last August. It was late August, and I don't care that it was hot out. No excuse for a t-shirt and shorts if you want to be taken seriously as a comic. So I had jeans and a nice button-down and my suit jacket, which I think was a better choice. It was my wife's idea, and I believe it looked pretty good. Anyway, I knew the jokes I was going to tell. I had a 3-minute set, and the jokes were about babies, having babies, and having a newborn baby. And what I try to do, and I really try to be professional about this, is hit my time. From what I have heard from a number of different professional sources in the comedy world, one of the things they look for in terms of, you know, does this comic get promoted, does this comic get to be given stage time, is can you hit your time? At Comedy Works, as is the case in most places, you get a certain amount of time. When you start getting towards the end of your time, they flash a light from the back, and if you see that light, you've got another, you know, finish the joke that you're telling, basically, or you got another 10 to 15 seconds, maybe 30 if the guy running the mic is feeling generous. But you go too long, they will cut off your mic. Doesn't matter if you're in the middle of a sentence. The first time I was ever on a Comedy Works stage, it was Comedy Works South over in Centennial. And I figured for a 5-minute clean contest, I'll do my best stuff. So I was telling the Phantom of the Opera jokes. And I had exactly 5 minutes of stuff. I had not budgeted time for people to laugh. So I was actually singing the last song, which is something else I don't do at Comedy Works, and I can talk about that in a sec. Singing the last song, and I was halfway in, and the mic cut out because I had gone over time since I wasn't recording it. I don't even know if it was exactly at 5 minutes. Probably was, since it was a contest. But regardless, while I don't know that it hurt me as far as the contest, it does not make a person look professional if you have to be cut off. And there's ways to look even less professional in that situation, which I have heard about. I don't think I've seen it. Is where, well, yet another story. At Comedy Works, I've heard of at least one person who they cut their mic off and they just kept going anyway. It's like they had something they wanted to say and they were going to finish it. And I don't think they had to be dragged off stage, but I think the host came on and kind of helped them understand they needed to get off stage. And as far as I know, that was the last time this particular comic was welcome at Comedy Works. It's possible to be really unprofessional in that situation. And I think about way back when I used to have a show I produced at Bovine Metropolis Theater, Stand Up and Deliver. There was one guy, God bless him, I haven't seen him since, but I was not hosting that night. My friend Torin was hosting, and I figure comics understand what the light means, and I'm pretty sure he told all of us, hey, this is the light. There was one guy on stage, and Torin gave him the light, and the guy kept going, and Torin gave him the light again, and the guy kept going, and finally, I think it was Jesse Hansen in the booth who cut in and said, hey, that's great, thank you, everybody give a round of applause, so that this guy could understand that he was supposed to get off the stage. And in this case, I don't believe it was, I'm so wonderful, I don't care about the light, I'm more important than it. I believe this guy just didn't get it. I think he was a little challenged. Anyway, just stories from my past in comedy. But I say all that to say that I really want to hit my time. I want to look professional. So if it's a 3-minute set, I try to budget about 10% of that time for laughter. So call it 20 seconds. for you math majors out there. I know that 20 seconds is not exactly 10% of 3 minutes, but you can deal with it. I wrote a 2 minute 40 second set, practiced that, had it ready, and I haven't timed the recording I made, but I think it was right around 3 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, 10 seconds. Would love to share the recording with you. Made the mistake of starting my phone, and then instead of just setting it on the nearby stool, which is there for that purpose, I put the phone in my jacket pocket. So it is audible, but just barely, and I will spare you having to try to listen to that. But it's too bad that I didn't record it in a better way, because I really would like to share it. One of the things I took away from the experience, while I don't recall that any jokes got such a good laugh I had to wait on the next joke, there actually may have been one or two of those, because I was more relaxed. I felt like I was more relaxed than I've been previously. I'll tell you one thing, I actually saw the light. And this is the first time I've seen the light, although since I have actually had my mic cut off once before and have been on that stage a number of times, I'm sure I've been lit before. This was the first time I was actually able to see and process in my head, oh, hey, I just got the light. And another thing that the talent coordinator down at Comedy Works, Deacon Gray, has mentioned being unprofessional thing comics do when you get lit, to say, okay, so here's my last joke, or oh, I see the light, to indicate to the audience, I need to wrap this up. I don't think it's a crucial mistake, but it's another mark of, yeah, maybe not too professional. When I saw the light, didn't say anything to the audience about it. I just sped up my tempo a little bit to finish the thought I had, and also to edge in one more joke in the hopes that I could get it out before they cut the mic, and they let me. Anyway, so that was good, and it was good to be more relaxed. And what I really took away from the set, I felt like everywhere I put a joke in, people laughed. Some jokes, of course, got more laughs than others. Some of the material is working a little better than some other of the material, but I don't recall any moments where I threw out a joke and it just sat there. There was a reaction, a positive reaction to each joke that I told, and that's one of the reasons why I think Tuesday night's one of the best sets I've had yet in 3 years of doing comedy. I guess it's 3.5 at this point. So yeah, Comedy Works, it was a great experience. Oh, there were notes afterwards. So for those of you who don't know, in the Comedy Works green room, sometimes talent coordinator Deacon Gray will give notes individually to people, which he has done with me. The first time I got up to do the 2 minute newbie set, that is the first thing, you know, first time you call in to New Talent Night and call in over and over and over till you get a slot, you get 2 minutes. And I figured, it seemed logical to me, I've got 2 minutes, I want to get the maximum amount of laughs from the audience. What works better than parody songs? Nothing. So what's a 2 minute parody song? And I got up and I sang Scroll to Me. And I did get it down in 2 minutes, and it was a big reaction from the audience. Parody songs always get a big reaction. The thing is, at that point, Deacon had seen me twice. Once I sang Phantom of the Opera parodies with some jokes in between, and the second time, completely 2 minutes, was a song. And so the note he had for me afterwards was, you can't sing all the time. And initially when he told me that, I did not take it well, because I was not working at anywhere near a professional level, and I couldn't see the gift that he had given me. Fortunately, I didn't let it affect me too badly, and with the balm of time, was able to see what I believe he actually meant, which was not, you suck, or we don't like you, or anything to that. At that point, I had, and I swear I will tell the story of how I got into stand-up eventually, probably not this morning. At that point, I produced two shows, one that ran at Solid Grounds Coffee Shop twice, and then the one at the Stand Up and Deliver, I believe, had just started. I had done comedy, I'd been doing comedy for maybe a year and a half, and had a dozen opportunities to do comedy, and in every one I had sung part of what I had done, getting up on stage at church. I'd started out with a song, it wasn't a parody song, but there was still singing involved. I don't think I had a stage performance that didn't involve singing, and it was kind of becoming a crutch for me. It was the go-to. It was, well, if I can't get laughs any other way, I can get laughs with this. And there's nothing wrong with getting laughs doing a parody song. Weird Al has made an empire on that. And one of these days, he and I are going to have a collaborative project together. Keep your eyes and ears open for that. But if that's all I have, it's not going to be enough. And I think what Deacon was saying was, if this is all you have, this is as far as you're going to go here. Being a humorist, there's lots of examples of great humorists. The Smothers Brothers make excellent use of music. Victor Borgia, one of my favorite comics, he's dead now. I don't think we can ask, but he probably would have called himself a humorist and not a stand-up comic. But Comedy Works is a stand-up comic venue. If, God willing, the time comes that I am opening or featuring for somebody, maybe there'll be enough leeway that I could, you know, that I could do some singing. Maybe even bring a guitar or have a piano on stage, although right now that seems like it would be pushing it. But what they are looking for from comics wanting to get on the B-list, wanting to move further up the ranks at Comedy Works, which is why the system is in place and New Talent Night exists, they want to see, can you do stand-up comedy? Being a humorist, having gimmicks, that's great. Can you do stand-up comedy? Oh, but I have this flashing neon suit. That's great. Can you do stand-up comedy? So you want to do ventriloquism, you want to juggle, you want to hypnotize somebody from the audience, that'd be a pretty good trick in 3 minutes. If you can do it, great. But can you do stand-up? And I believe that's what Deacon was trying to say. And so why did I start telling that story? It seems like it was ages ago. Oh, the note. So the first time I got on for New Talent Night, I sang a song. Deacon said, you can't sing all the time. And once I was able to realize that was a gift, I guess I have sung since. The 5 minutes I did for the New Faces contest last year when I was in the t-shirt and shorts, as previously mentioned, the jokes were about pop music. And I would sing a snippet of the song and then make fun of it. So I have sung on that stage. I felt comfortable bringing it back in. But I don't want that to be a crutch. And so while I used music to, I believe, good effect in the October show, the hour-long show, last fall, when I get a chance to do an open mic, comedy open mic or music open mic like last night, well, when it's a music open mic, I think about bringing in music. If it's a comedy open mic, I tend not to anymore. Because I need to work on the straightforward jokes. I know the music works. I know I can write a clever parody song. I know I can sing a parody song if it's in my range and sing it well. So I've got that going for me. Now I need to work on the other stuff. And that's what open mics are really for, is working on the stuff. And when it's a showcase at Comedy Works, which is about actual stand-up, I don't sing so much. I said all of that, and I do mean all of it, as a juxtaposition for the notes that I got from Deacon Gray this past Tuesday. So the first time, 2 minute set, it was an individual note just in passing. The next time that I did 3 minutes, they were 3 minutes on the Fast and the Furious movie, not the latest one, but the one before that, with the tank and the 30-mile-long runway while we bring down this enormous airplane. And it was okay. It was probably the least amount of laughs I've gotten at Comedy Works. And the note Deacon had was, you know, you're telling jokes about a movie maybe a lot of the audience hasn't seen, and so it's hard to relate to. Again, a very valuable note, which I appreciate that he gave me. Before last Tuesday, the only other note that I recall from Comedy Works was actually not from Deacon. It was from a guy who caught me outside after the show. I wish I had written down his name, because he told me it, and he apparently opened for, my brain is blanking, John Lovitz. He opened for John Lovitz when Lovitz was at a comedy club in L.A., and so this is a guy who, you know, has some comedy chops, and it would be nice if I could actually use his name, but it was a guy. So this guy, I had done my 3-minute set on ninjas. And it was the first time back to Comedy Works after taking a year off from stand-up. And if Deke had any notes for me that night, I didn't stick around to get them. I may not have realized there was group notes and missed it. I don't know. Didn't get any notes from Deacon. But this guy, afterwards, he was like, "Hey, I enjoyed your set. Just, you know, if you don't mind, I had a couple notes. I opened for John Lovitz, so, you know, I have some idea what I'm talking about." And he said, "You know, you use a lot of words. You don't have to tell us how smart you are." This was also a very good note, and it's one I try to keep in mind when I'm writing jokes. It is kind of a default for me. I want to appear intelligent. I want people to think I'm smart. And it goes back to self-identity issues and difficulty in elementary school. There was a season when I just tried to use as many 3 or 4 or 5 syllable words as I could when I said anything, because if people thought I was smart, maybe they would like me. And I do have a good vocabulary. I am well-read. Yay for me. Pat on the back. If I'm going to tell jokes, people need to be able to understand what in heaven's name I'm talking about. And so the bigger the words are, unless I am addressing, you know, a Mensa group or symposium of doctors or something, the bigger the words are, the less the chances the audience can go along with it. There's a flip side to that. It's possible to dumb down comedy too much. And there are comics who, much like there are comics that just go for the dirty laugh, there are comics that go for the easy laugh, the dumb laugh. That's not me. But I need to... It's not even I need to dumb down the material, as I need to talk like I'm just talking to a friend. I almost said talk like I'm talking to my wife, but that would make it sound like I need to dumb things down for my wife. And believe me, her IQ is probably twice mine. But to where I'm just having a casual conversation. I'm just talking and saying something that makes people laugh. You know, if I'm at a party and I get to throw a joke in, I would be willing to bet I don't tend to use words that are difficult to understand. I don't get too many words in. And I want to do the same thing on stage. It really comes down to confidence in myself as a writer and in my ability to craft a good joke. So when I do sets and sets come together, I tend to go through, I'll go through and I'll write word for word, write a set down, and then look at it and say, what words can I take out? What words are unnecessary? How can I tighten this to get to the joke faster and to just use fewer syllables? Says the guy who is recording a podcast that will probably end up being about 45 minutes long. Anyway, so those are all the Comedy Works notes I had received up to last Tuesday, and they were all valuable. So Tuesday, I, as I've said several times, had a 3-minute set, and it was broken down into 3 1-minute segments, roughly. I had a minute about audience reactions, different audience reactions when I say that I have a baby. I had a minute about the birthing video being frightening and how I feel bad for the cameraman. And I had a minute about baby rules, where I, well, you know what? I don't even have to tell you, because you're going to get to hear it a little later. Not the Comedy Works version, but the version from Solid Grounds Coffee Shop last night. So I do those 3 minutes, and like I say, everywhere I put a joke, I'll have to listen to it again and see if that's really true, but it felt like everywhere I put a joke, I got a laugh. And that's fantastic. That's good when that happens. And I got off stage, and the show went on, and this time around, this particular night, it was a group note session when the last B-lister had gone up. So it had moved into the A-listers and the almost famous people that did close out the show. Us B and C listers and the newbies, if they wanted, and I think both of them were there, gathered in the green room for Deacon to give us any notes that he had. And it was very valuable. I like doing group note sessions. It would be hard if, when it came to me, he had something, you know, critical to say, not just a critique, but that was critical. But that's part of the game. Comics need to have a thick skin and need to be able to take criticism. And so far in my experience, Deacon is as gracious as he can be, you know, not, all right, sit down, you suck. But in fact, I was at a Comedy Works show, and a guy got up to do his 2-minute newbie set. My wife and former roommate friend Sarah, who's also a friend of mine, were there. They can attest to this. The newbie got up, and his first joke was about his gerbil having a bowel movement on his chest, which is about the nicest way I can say that. And that was the most dignified his set was. It went downhill from gerbil poop. And I may have told this story before. What I took away from that was, A, it is possible to lose a crowd at Comedy Works because, and without being really racist or really sexist or something, just being bad. And then what I took away, though, was the MC, and I want to say it was Matt Monroe, came up and he got the audience back. And he had to do a little work, but if he hadn't done that, I mean, the whole show could have been tainted by that two-minute performance. But he got the audience back, and it was fantastic. And the power that an MC has to affect the show was really brought home at that moment. Anyway, what I've heard, because I was there to see a friend, my friend Jeff, I wasn't on stage and therefore wasn't backstage, is that this two-minute gerbil poop comic came off stage, and Deacon said to him, "Is that all you have?" And that might sound like really critical, but considering that, you know, this comic almost tanked an entire show, I would not have blamed someone, you know, a talent coordinator, for saying, "You suck," or "That is the worst performance ever," or something like that. Saying, "Is that all you have?" Trying to say, you know, maybe you don't want to do that on stage anymore, seems, in my opinion, to be a very gracious and careful way of trying to open a comic's eyes to their shortcomings. So it would be, I say all that a lot, don't I? I say all that to say, it's my podcast, I'll say all that all day if I want to, that in my experience, hey, I said that a lot of times too, it's a drinking game. Take a drink every time I say all that to say, or in my experience. Deacon gives notes graciously, and I appreciate that. He's got 30 years in the business. I am sure he has seen all of it, plus a little bit more. And anybody that comes away from one of his notes saying, "Boy, he was just really rude or harsh," probably like I was when he said to me, "Hey, you can't sing all the time." It's probably still an amateur, still not ready to be taken seriously as a comic. And I want to be. So I was glad for the group note session. And he had nothing really extremely critical to say to any of us. One guy, a note was like, "Hey, you started off with a couple puns, and then you got to something serious, and I was expecting another pun." Another guy was, "Wow, this setup was great." You're like, "Hey, I took LSD this afternoon, and I was waiting for a good joke, and then the joke was kind of a letdown. So you had a great setup, write a better joke." That sort of thing. And a lot of positive things to say. He got to me and had three things to say, only two of which were notes. One was just more of an observation. He asked, "Hey, has anyone ever told you you look like Jared from the Subway commercials?" Which was funny because, yes, actually. I got to the extreme honor of doing a 25-minute set when I was about a year and a half into doing comedy, which is ridiculous, and that's a long story that I'm not telling today. A fantastic opportunity that really went well. A lot of chances to totally fall flat on my face with that 25 minutes, but it was a good set. Anyway, the reason I'm speaking of it now is at the end of that set, when I was in the back, this gal, who I think was a little drunk, came up to me and told me I looked like Jared from the Subway commercials. So that's two people now, and I figure next time I get up at Comedy Works, I might as well make use of that, tell some jokes about it. The two actual notes Deacon had for me, one was, and he was absolutely right, in the second part of my three-minute set, when I talk about the birthing video, to reach the subject of birthing video, I want to bring up birthing class, and to do that, I ask if there are parents in the audience. But the way I actually said it was, "Hey, where are my parents at?" And Deacon said, "Well, I'm in the back thinking your parents probably aren't here." And he's right. That is, there's 100 ways to phrase that question, and I picked probably the worst possible one. I asked that question differently last night at Solid Grounds, and I'll ask it differently next time I get up at Comedy Works. And the other note was, when I talk about the rules for babies, he suggested that I might want to play it a little more sarcastically. That I was just kind of matter-of-fact about it. I was like, "Wow, there's so many rules for babies." And then told the joke. And that if I was a little more sarcastic, indicated that all these rules are a bit overwhelming, the audience might be with me even a little bit more. And that was it for notes. And so they were valuable, and I will absolutely take them. And moving forward, the next time I'm on stage at Comedy Works probably will be the New Faces contest. But whether it's the 5 minutes for New Faces or it's 3 minutes for another New Talent Night, 8 to 10 weeks from now, which would put it at the end, late May, maybe by mid-June. It's possible that the next New Talent opportunity might be before New Faces. But either way, I will be doing the same set with changes based on the notes Deacon gave me and any new and improved jokes, anything that's working better in the intervening time. Because, as I have said in a previous podcast episode, one of the other ways I've not been professional at Comedy Works is every time I've gotten on that stage, and I mean every time, I have done different material. I got up Comedy Works South for the clean contest and did Phantom of the Opera. Got up at downtown for New Talent Night for the first time and sang Scroll to Me. Got up for New Talent Night the second time, did Fast and the Furious jokes. Got to do the New Faces contest in 2013, told my King Super set. Got up 2014 and did stuff on ninjas. New Faces contest 2015, I did pop music. And I'm blanking on... Well, and then there was this last time where I did stuff on having a baby. So that's 7 times I've gotten up on stage at Comedy Works, and I think I might even be forgetting one. And every time, it's been different material. Now, if anyone's paying attention, and I think they are, I have shown that I don't just write jokes on one subject, that I do have a variety of material, and hopefully that's a valuable thing for them to know. But what I have not shown is that I can work on the same material and make it better. And it was very valuable. The Anthony Crawford podcast, Talkin' Shop, Deacon Gray was one of the guests, and I was actually there with my wife in attendance that night. And he talked about what they're looking for and how the list works and how you get on the B list and then A list and then Almost Famous. And he said that they're looking to see comics working on their material. And I don't know if I've heard him say it or if it's been in passing from someone else that's had some coaching under him, but apparently, is my understanding, in my experience, hey, you take a drink, that with Comedy Works, they want to see comics doing the same set over and over and over. Seems to me like that would be boring, but if the purpose is the set getting better? Are you showing that you can work the material and that means you're working at a professional level? Well, then I haven't been doing that. And so they are going to get baby jokes all year this year. Every chance I get to get up on stage, that's what I'm going to be giving them. And hopefully I can show improvement in the specific set and in the one area, because I would really like to be on the B-list. Moving on from Comedy Works, last night I got to do 10 minutes at Solid Grounds Coffee Shop. And I have grown to love the last Friday of the night open mic at Solid Grounds. I really do. And I told my wife, last night, over the past year, I've probably attended 6 or 7 of these open mics. I'm not going to make you suffer through me counting up how many times it's been. Let's call 6. But last night was the first time where I felt like a regular. I felt like that there were people... Like, I came in the door, and several people saw me, and their faces brightened. As the impression I got being, hey, we were hoping you would be here. And the sound guy, Eric, and I chatted for a bit. I got to make use of Earl's piano, and Earl is this... He's a humorist who has been playing piano and telling jokes, he said, for 30 years, and I believe him. He's fantastic. In fact, if I ever saw he was doing a show, I would buy a ticket. I would go see it. I should tell him that next time I see him. But I felt like a regular. I felt like, you know, one of the people that is part of this open mic month in and month out, and that people look forward to seeing me. And that felt good. It really did. I want that sort of thing in a monthly showcase, and I'm believing for that 2, and I have an idea of where that could take place, and I'm still waiting on God for permission to move forward. But had a fun set, and actually, and this one you get to listen to because I made a recording and not in my inside pocket. Had a fun set, even though I was not well prepared for the October show, and for most previous times where I'm going to be playing music or telling jokes, I will practice over and over and over what I'm going to do. I put a lot of practice time in. And this past month, I could use as an excuse the fact that I became primary caregiver for a little boy. My wife started back to work part-time, and so I've had days like today where being his father is my main job. But the truth is, I have plenty of time, like I have time right now to record this podcast. I had plenty of time to practice the piano. I got lazy. I figured, oh, you know, it'll be fine. And so not only did I have a piece of paper on the piano with the chords written out that I wanted to play for my Leanne Rimes parody song, not only that, which is bad enough, I really prefer to have things memorized, because then there isn't the issue of, hey, I've got this piece of paper floating around the piano, which once again was an issue last night, but I screwed up the song. I got fine through the first verse and then the chorus, and then I went back to the first verse, and somehow, instead of looking at the first verse chords as I'm singing the second verse, I was looking at the chorus chords, and I would try to play the chorus chords for the second verse and wonder why they weren't working. So the unfortunate thing about last night's open mic performance is that I was not prepared. And I'm not going to say shame on me, but I will say 10 lashes with a wet noodle on me for not being prepared, because I have no excuse. I was lazy. The good news is, and this is actually a positive thing to come out of that negative, I had fun with it anyway, as you'll hear on the recording, which I will play momentarily. It took me 3 tries to finally get through the second verse, but instead, yeah, in the past, I would have gotten flustered, I would have apologized, I would have maybe said, you know what, forget the piano, I'll just sing it. I would have done something to try to recover from my mistake. Last night, I owned my mistake. I was like, no, I'm going to get this. It's really good. And I figured out what I was doing. I actually stopped the song, figured out what was going on for a couple seconds, and then hit the second verse. And when I finished the second verse, before I went to the chorus, I was like, see, it was worth it, right? And I like, if I had to be ill-prepared, I like that I could just roll with it. Because that's a skill I've been trying to develop. Being more relaxed on stage, just being comfortable in my own skin, owning the stage. It's really, it's part of what I mean when I say own your stage, that if everything is going great, great, own the stage, have fun with it. But even more so when something happens, you get heckled, you flub a joke, you misplay an entire section of the song you're trying to do on the piano, I owned that stage in that I didn't apologize for it. I didn't need to apologize. It was a mistake. Performers make mistakes. It was all part of the show in that it happened during the show. And I had fun with it. I was able to laugh at myself because I owned that stage, because I was comfortable and felt like I belonged and had a right to be there. I was able to laugh at myself. And so everybody could have fun with my mistake rather than making them feel uncomfortable or apologizing for being up there. So next time we're going to be better prepared, but I like what came out of that mistake, that, you know what, so what? We're having fun. You're having fun. Hopefully I'm having fun, definitely, and mistakes happen, and that's okay. It's a sharp contrast from some of the other performers at the open mic, and everybody had good music. There wasn't anybody that got up and I was like, oh, get them off stage, they're terrible. But if there were a dozen performers, probably half of the people that got up made some sort of disclaimer. Like, okay, I just started playing this instrument, or man, I haven't been up in a while. There was a guy who was like, you know those butterflies you get in your stomach when you haven't performed music in front of people? That's where I'm at right now. And nothing wrong with that. This is an amateur open mic. I'm not trying to be critical of people saying that. I have been that person. But in general, as a performer, in general, you have a drinking game where one of my voice cracks, you take a drink. Oh, you'll be getting drunk.
in general, when I am performing, I want to be out there on stage, whatever I'm doing, telling jokes, playing piano, juggling, which I can do and not well, but hey, you never know, you might get to see it sometime. And that's not a disclaimer or like me being down on myself. I'm not good at juggling. I can do it, but I'm not good. Anyway, if I'm going to be on stage, if I'm going to be performing, I want to own that stage. I want to have the attitude of I have something to give, and this is a good thing. I don't want to get on stage, regardless of what I'm going to be doing, and ask for the audience's forgiveness before I've even done anything. Now, if I really screw something up, you know, I go on stage, say I've told somebody, yes, I can do a juggling act for 5 minutes, and after 30 seconds I've proven, you know what, I can't, whatever. The point is that I did have a point. I swore I did. My baby boy is so cute. Let's look at him for a second. The point I'm making is, for me, I don't want to speak about anyone else's performances. For me, in any aspect of being on stage, doing a speech, telling a joke, playing piano, whatever, I want to know in my heart that I have something to give the audience. They may like it, they may not like it, but I have the right to be there. And so, just for myself, for my own understanding of my identity, I don't want to ever again get on stage and apologize for being up there. Or put a disclaimer, qualify, say, well, hopefully this will be good. And in fact, that's one of the changes I made for last night. In the October show, I kicked off with the song Show Me the Love. And several times in the song, I sang, I'm not quite sure that I'm funny. I hope you show me some love. And one of my comic friends, after hearing that, said, is that really something you want to do? Tell them you don't know if they're funny? Because if you don't know, it's not their job to tell you. And that was a good note. I really appreciate him saying that. And so last night I did the same song, except I would said in those moments, but I can promise I'm pretty funny. I hope you show me some love. I'm still asking for them to show me the love, because that's the whole point of the parody. But in such a way as, show me the love, don't show me the love, but you're going to have fun tonight. Instead of, I really hope you'll show me the love, and then by doing so prove that I'm funny. I didn't see that when I did the October show, and I'm not sure a lot of people came away with that impression, but if anybody did, I failed with that song. And so I'm not singing that song that way anymore, ever. I'm not going to apologize for being on stage. I have a right to be there. I have a place. I've been chosen either by the fact that anybody can sign up, like with the open mics, or because, you know, I've actually been chosen to participate on stage. But regardless of how I got up there, I've got something to give, and I'm going to give it. So I say that as a performer, but it's that much more important. I've been talking about things stand-up comics can do that are professional, that are not professional. Having your mic cut off, not professional. Wearing a t-shirt and shorts, unless there's a very specific thing to your act that involves that, not professional. I've been told starting off your set with, I know what you guys are thinking, blah, 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 not professional. Seeing the light and saying, okay, they're giving me the light, so this will be my last joke, not professional. And also getting on stage and apologizing, well, hopefully you guys will think this is funny, seriously not professional. It is something I cannot get away with as a comic, and I don't want to try. So, you know, maybe my material is great, maybe my material is not so great, but I'm going to own that stage, and then I can work on making the material better. So I've been talking about the Solid Grounds open mic, and I might as well let you hear what I got to do. I'll skip past the... you can hear the new song, the way I do the new song. You can skip past it if you want. It's about the first 3 minutes, but here, for your listening pleasure, is the set I did last night at Solid Grounds Coffee Shop.
All right, so he plays the piano too? How could God give one person that much talent? Seems almost unfair, doesn't it? Anyway, here's where I parody the Beatles. I got some jokes. found Superman, man, I think you're gonna like. A whip for born Madonna fans, that's a bit I hope you like. But I can promise that I'm funny, I hope you'll show me some love. Tuesday night, and the audience just kind of sat there when I told them that. It's like, oh, baby. Less resources for the rest of us. Take your whiny tax deduction and be gone! But one time, a couple weeks ago at an open mic, I said, hey, my wife and I had a baby boy. Somebody in the back, I swear, went, boo! Oh. I know, who boos a newborn child? You soulless monster? But I imagine I have some parents in the audience, right? Raise your hands if your parents in the audience. Yeah, anybody go through birthing classes? Uh-huh, so you've seen that video? They said we wouldn't sleep after the child was born. I personally haven't slept since I saw that video. And I say that and people think of the women and feel bad for them. Forget them, they knew what they were getting into. My thoughts and prayers are with the camera guy. Sitting, you know, trapped in this tiny room, bunch of people you don't know, filming that. You know, whatever they paid him, it was not enough. And they're just, the rules for babies keep changing, and they're so important. 30 years ago, I'm told, it was don't put the baby to bed on his back, always on his stomach. Today, don't put the baby to bed on his stomach, always on his back. Figure 30 years from now, don't put the baby to bed. Instead, suspend the child in midair from this nylon webbing. But whatever you do, don't face him south. So many rules. Don't put the baby to bed on his stomach. Don't put anything in the crib with the baby. Don't feed the baby after midnight. Don't get the baby wet. Now that I think about it, some of those rules actually might be for gremlins. But that's an easy mistake to make, I admit. I mean, think about it. On one hand, you've got this terrifying, scaly, insatiably demanding little monster, and on the other hand, you have gremlins. My wife doesn't like that joke. You have been very fun. So, I will do one more song, and then my time is out. Any Leanne Rand fans out there? I'm very sorry for what's about to happen. He's been fussy all day. You have changed his diaper a thousand times. That lyric is literally true. But then his eyelids fall in that magic hour when sunset draws nigh. Will he nap for an hour or two? There's just so much that you need to do. But you know what's coming next. You can try to breathe deep, try to keep him asleep. But you know, yeah, you know that you'll be up the whole night. Hour after hour, you'll surrender your power. Cause you know, yeah, you know. I'm gonna start that verse again. You used to own this world. Yeah, you run so free. You, what is the key? I'm going to find. Eric, come up and read this for me. Okay, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Still own this world. I swear I did. Yeah, you run so free. You were so alive. Now you can't find your keys. Or if truth be told, remember how to drive. Worth it, right? Yep. Underneath this hovering starlight, you'll be losing that sleeplessness fight. It'll steal your dreams tonight. You can try to breathe deep, try to keep him asleep, but you know, yeah, you know that you'll be up the whole night. Hour after hour, you'll surrender your power, cause you know, yeah, you know that you'll be up the whole night. No.
So in case it didn't quite translate into a non-visual medium, near the end of the Leanne Rimes parody song, I make like I've fallen asleep and bonk my head on the piano, which got a surprisingly... I knew I would get a laugh. I didn't know it would get that much of a laugh. And once again, parody songs prove to be a surefire way to get people to respond well. So that's this week's podcast. Appreciate my son for being quiet through most of it. Appreciate my dog who's hanging out right here next to me for being quiet through all of it. And I appreciate Leanne Rimes and the Beatles for not having a big problem with me making parodies of their music. And I appreciate you for listening, because if you weren't listening, I'd just be sitting here talking to myself. And there are enough people concerned about my mental status as it is. So, enjoy this snowy day, whether there's snow in the day that you are currently enjoying or not. Go out there and own your stage, whatever stage that is, and I look forward to bending your ear again next time around. Till then.